Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Monday, June 28th, 55 degrees here in Old Town Park City. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, it's Cesar Cornejo. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. It is quite a nice day out there so far right now, the Wasatch back. Temperatures, like you said, around the mid-50s so far right now. We expect to see that under the sunny, mainly sunny skies for today. We're going to reach a high of 79, where we expect to see some slight breeze coming in from the east and southeast. So a little bit of some wind. Other than that, not really seeing much else activity-wise as we go into tonight. Mostly clear skies, low of 52. Then Tuesday, we start to see the return of some moisture in the form of some possible thunderstorms, mostly, again, terrain-driven, so they will be over higher elevation areas. This is going to be a slight chance, but we remain on the mainly sunny side with temperatures remaining around the 80s for our highs on Tuesday. 55 will be the low on Tuesday night as we remain partly cloudy, so that helps keep us a little bit on the warmer side. Going to Wednesday, that's where we start to see rain chances become a little bit more prevalent for us along in Park City. We expect to see a high of 79, mostly sunny with a chance of thunderstorms. Partly cloudy skies for Wednesday night with a low of 55 once again. So we do see a little bit more of a mild night also. Thursday, we expect to see mostly sunny skies. Chance of showers, that's going to be one of our better days to see some rain for us. So we can expect to see a little bit more activity then. High of 80 degrees. And then going into Thursday night, we'll see 57 degrees as our low. Partly cloudy skies once again. The cloud cover doesn't really seem to break for us. Even going into Friday, we do have mostly sunny to maybe even partly cloudy skies. Again, chance of shower activity with a high of 81, especially towards the afternoon hours. Partly cloudy for that evening, low of 59. Saturday, we begin to see still the chance of rain and thunderstorms, mostly sunny, but a little bit warmer at 82. And then as we go into the evening, 60 with partly cloudy skies. Independence Day, we can expect to see still that chance of showers and thunderstorms. So unfortunately, we could have to adjust plans on Independence Day depending on how the weather turns out, but we still will see some sunshine and some warmer temperatures at 84 degrees. Live from the Pinpoint Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Cesar Cornejo. Back to you, Leslie.
All right. Thanks, Cesar. KPCW News Time now, 8:08. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be talking with the president of RTW Management Incorporated, George Goetz, with details on how his company is operating with the newly formed High Valley Transit. Later on, Summit County Clubhouse Executive Director Amber McKay and founding club member Matt Rutan with an update on the clubhouse activities and the remodeling job that's underway. Finally, the newly appointed chair of the Salt Lake City Committee for the Games, Catherine Rainey Norman, with an update on the Olympics possibly returning to Utah. We've got our guest just stuck in traffic, so I apologize for that. But we've got a vehicle accident with injuries, apparently, eastbound I-80 coming up to Park City. The accident occurred at about Lambs Canyon. The left lane is closed. Witnesses told KPCW earlier that a medical helicopter needed to land. We've got an estimated clearance of 9:45 this morning, again, with the traffic just backing up steadily down the canyon, looking like it's nearly there at the base of the canyon, based on what I can see. So not moving quickly at all. We've got more than 15-minute delays, it looks like, with that accident occurring there. Coming up on Thursday, July 1st, the new High Valley Transit will be rolling out as it separates from the Park City bus system. On the phone, I have George Goetz. He is the president of RTW Management, who will be operating the newly formed High Valley Transit buses. Good morning to you, George. Thanks for joining us. Also, I'm sorry, you're one of those stuck in the traffic jam there on I-80?
Yes, unfortunately, it's a little slow.
Okay. Well, tell us, start first, what is RTW?
So RTW Management operates fixed route transit all over the country, and we're excited for our first job in Utah, which is High Valley Transit.
Okay. And what is it exactly that you do for High Valley Transit?
We operate their fixed route, or we will, starting July 1st, operate their fixed route system. So this is what was formerly the lime, pink, and black bus routes with Park City.
Okay. And when you say operate, what does that mean?
So that means So the High Valley Transit creates the routes and the schedules. We hire the drivers and manage the system. So any problems scheduling, basically we staff the system.
All right. Maybe we can talk about the schedule in just a little bit, but did you bid for the job then?
So we didn't, and there are a lot of names involved. So High Valley Transit is Summit County's transit district. VIA Transportation owns the contract for the entire transportation system. So that's microtransit, paratransit, and fixed route. And they've subcontracted the fixed route portion to us.
Okay. So you're actually working for VIA then?
Correct.
Who was contracted by Summit County to operate the transit system.
That's right.
Okay. So in terms of scheduling then, what will that schedule look like? I mean, it used to be a bus would come by every 20 minutes or every 30 minutes. What's it going to look like now?
Yeah, right now the Lime route, which starts at the Jam Ranch Park and Ride, has 30-minute headways. And as of July 1st, it will have 15-minute headways.
Okay. So the Lime bus does continue?
Yes, in a slightly different form, but essentially, yes, it's the same route. It'll get you to the same places. We've added a couple stops, removed a couple stops, but effectively it's the same route.
Okay. And is it still going to be known as the Lime route, or is this the new Spiro route?
It's the new 101 Spiro.
Okay. All right. So we've got new understanding here.
But on the map, it's still lime colored, if that helps.
Okay. And then you'll have your own apps that will tell people when they can expect a bus to arrive?
You know what? I think that's coming. But initially, we'll have a schedule. So if you're at the Jam Ranch Park, it will be every 15 minutes on the 15-minute mark. But yes, I think the idea is to have an app that will give you real-time data, especially in the winter, as schedules get off, then you'll know when the next bus is coming. But that won't happen right away.
Okay. And then you say you're also responsible for hiring drivers. Are these all commercial licensed drivers?
Yes, all CDL drivers, which are kind of in a dearth right now. So we've been pulling from just about everywhere to find the kind of drivers that we're looking for.
Yeah, so when you say pulling from everywhere, you mean just all across the country where you're doing other jobs?
Yes, so we've done that. We've brought in some drivers from our operations out of state. We've hired motor coach drivers and school bus drivers and, Park City, because we split from Park City, some of the Park City drivers came over as well. So that's kind of how we've staffed.
Okay. How many drivers do you actually need?
We need 24 drivers.
Okay. And again, they're working for RTW as opposed to Summit County.
That's right.
And are you still able then? I mean, working for the county would be pretty good job. You'd get pretty good health insurance, benefits, paid vacation, things like that. Do you offer similar benefits?
Yes, we do. We don't have a pension, which I'm not sure if the county still offers, but I know some folks are grandfathered in to a pension, which has made hiring even more challenging. So we've given a higher starting rate and are providing our job is to provide a compelling work environment. So, the Lime route is probably the best route of the Park City routes. It's beautiful, it's long, and so we're trying to provide a good circumstances, good work environment, good hours, year-round stability, all those kinds of things are the kind of offering that we're trying to make attractive to drivers.
Yeah, and something that transit drivers in the past also were eligible for was affordable housing. What about that? Is that proving to be a challenge?
Yes. We've had situations where, prospective candidates just couldn't afford to leave their affordable unit. So yeah, that has been a challenge as well. So some of our drivers are coming up from Salt Lake or, maybe out in Camas or even Oakley or Heber and other areas.
Yeah, so what happens then in a situation like this morning where you've got drivers in Salt Lake City stuck in traffic and unable to get to the routes?
Yeah, so there are a couple things. Generally, our first route starts at, 5, just after 5 a.m., and so those morning drivers are coming in a little before the commute, so there's, you know, we're less likely to have something like that happen. We also have an extra board driver, so a driver who gets there early just in case something happens. And the third option is their alternate routes, you know, up through immigration or through past Gardens Path. You know, it probably takes an extra hour and 20 minutes, or probably takes an extra 20, 30 minutes to get into work if you take an alternate route. But, you know, our road supervisors and our managers are aware of those kinds of things. They, you know, they call drivers and let them know, hey, there's a traffic incident, you've got to get here early. So those are all ways we manage drivers from Salt Lake.
Okay. So you're ready to roll then for Thursday, huh?
Yes. We're still hiring. So if you know anyone with the CDL who wants to drive for us, we are actively hiring. But we do have, you know, with our folks from out of state, we do have sufficient staff to operate.
Okay. And starting wages, what?
We start out at $2,050 with a $1,500 sign-on bonus.
Okay. And then in terms of training, you offer that as well?
No. So if you don't have a seat, we train on the route and, you know, we have corporate training, but we're only hiring experienced drivers who already have a CDL. Okay. If you have a CDL, we'll train you to get a passenger endorsement.
Ah, okay. There's a difference then. I didn't realize that.
There is. Like a truck driver has a CDL, but not necessarily a passenger endorsement, and we'll train that person.
Okay. All right, George, anything else you'd like to tell us? Where is your company based?
So we're based out of Salt Lake City.
Okay. But then do work across the country. And this is your first Utah job. That's interesting.
Yes. There's not a lot here. So it's mostly UTA and formerly Park City Transit. So it's nice to have something in our own backyard.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to tell our listeners, George?
No. If you know anyone with a commercial driver's license who wants a, you know, a great work experience, give us a call.
Okay. George, appreciate your time. Thank you.
No, thank you.
Taking a look at some local news now, the Elk Meadows apartment complex in Lower Pine Brook is operating without a business license due to extensive violations of health, building, and fire codes, conditions that community advocates say have persisted for years. KPCW's Michelle Deininger has this report.
Elk Meadows was built in 1993 and contains about 90 units that rent for $1,300 to $1,600 a month. According to a letter sent to its owners last September by the Summit County Attorney's Office, inspectors found some buildings there infested with cockroaches and bedbugs, stairs not safely attached to structures, and missing or broken smoke detectors. Community advocates told KPCW that when tenants complained about conditions, they were swiftly evicted. 21-year-old Yaneli Murillo lived with her family in Elk Meadows for more than 3 years before being evicted in November 2020. She said she was unsure why they had to leave. She said they paid rent on time, ignored their ripped-up carpet, and bought their own pest control products. But they did ask for repairs for several pressing problems.
Some of the sinks were, like, leaking. The bathroom was leaking from the bottom. And the window actually was broken, too. And a lot of cold wood going to the apartment, you know? Like, every time it was winter, and we were paying more rent because it was always cold and more bills.
Murillo said those problems were never fixed despite repeated requests. Then her family was evicted, and she recalls the property manager saying it was because they left something on their exterior stairs.
They said that it was because we had a mess, because they actually invented too that they found something like on the stairs, you know, like going upstairs where we used to live, and they said it was us.
Elk Meadows is classified as affordable housing, which confers tax benefits on its owners because rents are below market rate and based on a percentage of tenants' income. When COVID-19 hit, the federal government enacted an eviction moratorium, prohibiting landlords from evicting tenants who couldn't pay because they lost jobs due to the shutdown. The moratorium remains in effect, but people may still be evicted for other reasons. Diego Zegarra, Vice President of Equity and Impact for the Park City Community Foundation, said unusual evictions are occurring there. As an example, he cited a tenant who hit a post in the parking lot with his car and received a $5,000 repair bill. When he couldn't pay that in full, he was evicted.
I think that families are in a position where they don't have a lot of power and are afraid to speak up for their rights, given that there is a possibility the landlord will find other reasons to evict them. Organizations and individuals trying to help the issue are trying to strike the right balance between applying pressure for the landlord to be in compliance without putting families at risk.
Current Elk Meadows tenants approached by KPCW would not speak on the record. The complex has been owned since 2018 by Seattle-based Security Properties. Its CEO, Bob Krokauer, didn't respond to requests for comment. In an emailed statement, Security Properties Managing Director Mike Voorhees said his company has spent $800,000 on improvements since buying the property, but declined further comment. Elk Meadows is Security Properties' first Utah investment. The company's website says it's one of the largest owners of residential real estate in the country, with 25,000 units of multi-housing. When Elk Meadows was inspected last year, Summit County Attorney Helen Strawn said inspectors left after visiting just three of the eight buildings. They didn't need to see any more. This month, Strawn and other officials met by phone with Elk Meadows representatives. After the meeting, Strawn said Elk Meadows seemed to be making progress, and another inspection would occur later this summer. If Elk Meadows doesn't resolve its code violations, the county could issue violation notices, which would rack up costly fines that accrue daily. A new coalition recently formed that includes local nonprofits as well as county officials. That group has tried to reach Security Properties to intervene on behalf of tenants facing or threatened with eviction. Security Properties hasn't responded to them either. Michelle Deininger, KPCW News.
Well, after losing money for the last 16 years, the owner of the Kimball Junction Silver Mountain Sports Club says he is closing that location. With increasing growth in the Snyderville Basin, a second location at Kimball Junction made sense for the Silver Mountain Sports Club. Club owner Stanton Jones says while he has struggled with that location since it opened, the staggering financial losses he took during COVID-19 is what finally did the club in.
It's been a long time coming. We've really struggled at that location to attract sufficient members to justify having a viable operation there. It's very difficult with a rec center next door that is tax exempt and offers all kinds of incentives for people to join at reduced prices. They don't mind losing a lot of money, but I just got kind of tired of losing money for the last 16 years at that location.
He says the 20,000 square feet of space will be available for either office or medical space. He thought he had a buyer for the club, but that deal fell through in May. He is keeping the Prospector Club open, saying it has a lot more amenities and a larger membership base. It's also an easier place for tourists to come and enjoy. He says some of his members understand.
The reaction has been fairly supportive. A lot of members are now going to come to the Prospector location. A lot of members go back and forth anyway. They might work out Monday through Friday at Kimball and come on the weekends to the Prospector location. But the Prospector location offers a lot more amenities and a lot of, it's bigger. It has a lot of things going for it that Kimball couldn't have because of its size. And so we're hoping that members will continue to use their membership at the Prospector location. There's obviously a group of members that are disappointed and wanted us to stay open in that location, but it's been very, very difficult and was impossible for us to continue.
Jones says that the Prospector location is currently for sale, and he says he does have a handful of offers for the club, with all of them saying they want to keep it open as a club. He says he will hold on to the property just to the east of the club for a potential affordable housing and townhome development, a project that he says is being worked on now by the Park City Planning Department. It's 8:28 now. Good morning. Well, the Summit County Clubhouse is thick in the remodeling of its newly purchased clubhouse. On the phone, I have the executive director of the clubhouse and one of the founding members of the clubhouse, Matt Rutan. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
Giving us a chance.
Hi. Good morning. Amber, let's see. You and Matt, I think, both stuck in the traffic on I-80?
Yeah. No, just me. Matt's safe in his home in Park City.
Okay, lucky you, Matt.
Yeah, sorry to hear about that.
Yeah, can you give me any details, Amber? I mean, where are you stuck at? I know you started off early.
Milepost 135, and we are just at a literal standstill. We left at 7:20, so it looks like it's not going to be cleared for another good hour or so. So if anyone's going up Parley's, give yourself time.
Okay. You only have another mile to go, though. I think the accident's at 136, so hang in there.
Oh, good. Okay. All right. Thanks.
Okay. Well, so the clubhouse, as I corrected it, purchased a home on Highland Drive last year?
We actually were gifted a home by a benefactor family, and they gifted the home to the Park City Community Foundation for our exclusive use on Highland Drive, yes.
Okay, so who is the owner then? The community foundation or the clubhouse?
The owner is the community foundation.
Ah, okay. And then...
Yeah, it's a really great partnership with them.
Sure. And so you will enjoy the clubhouse once it's finished, lease rent-free?
Yes, absolutely. So our obligation is to make sure that we maintain and upkeep the clubhouse. So any maintenance, any yard work, the renovations that are currently we're focusing on are the responsibility of the club.
Okay. And then the house is in Highland. It's in Highland Estates there on Highland Drive. Is that correct?
I'm sorry. Can you say that again, Leslie?
Yeah. So the location of the home is on Highland Drive in Highland Estates there?
Correct. Yep. 6304 Highland Drive.
Okay. So how is the renovation process going?
Well, so we're just at the very beginning of that. We just barely were able to get our permits approved and are in the process of the demolition. We're focusing on doing that now because of the construction climate up in Park City. A lot of contractors, a lot of subcontractors are so busy with all of the construction that we're trying to get a little window to be able to do demolition and renovation. So we're trying to move ahead as quickly as we can. However, obviously, this takes funds, and that is something that we are embarking on as a major gift campaign to be able to raise the money to renovate our space into something that we that would best fit the clubhouse purpose.
How much money do you need to raise?
We're looking at about between $275,000 and $300,000. So it's definitely a project.
Yeah. So what needs to be done to the house?
Well, so the house is in a residential area, and we're not a residential program, so we don't people don't live at the space. They don't have their own apartments or whatever. It's our headquarters. So we're having to make some adjustments based on the Americans with Disability Act, so having an ADA bathroom, an ADA kitchen, a ramp in the front, so if anyone needs to have wheelchair access to the clubhouse, they can. In addition, we're just trying to open up some of the space and make it a little bit more purposeful for us. We do the business of the clubhouse in the space, and so all of the work that is done to keep the clubhouse running is in that space. In addition, members can come and utilize the space to get support with employment and education. And then, of course, we need to work on the landscaping in the yard. So we have a big project in front of us.
Yeah, sure do. So are you back to normal after COVID?
Yeah, we are back to normal as much as we can be. So all of our members and staff and board have been vaccinated. So that's wonderful news. We supported the members in getting appointments for vaccinations. And so we have been running the clubhouse ever since May of 2020. It's just, you know, it's difficult to everyone's kind of trying to get back into the groove of post-COVID life. And so we are as well trying to get back out there and trying to get the community to be aware of the clubhouse and the services that we can provide the community. But the members that have been coming are incredible. They've been able to maintain employment. They're excited to continue to help run the clubhouse. I know Matt is definitely one of our incredible members who devotes a lot of time and energy into his clubhouse. And so we've been just working and going strong post-COVID, everything we can do to keep going.
Okay, Matt, so tell us who the clubhouse is intended for.
Yeah, thanks for having us on to talk about Clubhouse. You have a great show, and you represent Park City very well. A little bit about me. Clubhouse targets the mentally ill, who are necessarily a little stable, you know, not in crisis and want to recover, you know, some things that were lost during their mental illness. Like I lost social conscience. I was really socially isolated, very introverted. And this really brings the personality back out to me. And we do some hard work as well, or mostly hard work, to where that sometimes distracts us from the problems, our mental illness. So we're working so hard, we just forget about it. So that's an important step. We're just, in the just building up consistency and stability and recovery so we can get back in the workforce or get back with society and be on good terms with that.
Yeah. Can you talk a little about how the clubhouse helps just with the traditional mental health treatment that you receive?
Yeah, it's part of a package that, we have the medicinal points that are helpful, then therapeutic, and then this is a non-therapeutic intervention, but it's all just as important, getting out of your shell and becoming a brand new person, building up trust for, some bridges that you burned in the past. So building up trust that can be lost in like very fast and takes a long time to recover.
Yeah, you experienced some of that, huh?
Yeah, including homelessness, hospital stays, and even jail, unfortunately. But the Park City community has been very supportive of me and seeing the long term, seeing that I could bloom in the future. So good on them to help have the foresight to see me through the tough times.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Still support me.
Well, good job. So what is it that you do at the clubhouse?
I manage the finances mainly, but you can do anything in a day. It's there's a lot of new things I get to do. Like I've never done any public speaking, and that was fun and enjoyable. As well as, cooking. I like to cook. Sometimes we do a lot of tours, and those are a good way to get the message out. And and thanks for letting us speak about Clubhouse today.
So you actually have a college degree as well. So this is...
Yeah, I do. Yeah. It was a bachelor's. Right now, I'd really like to go back to school, but... Right now, I'm helping my parents, and they say hello, by the way.
Okay. Ed and Lynn. Tell me, do you have some background then in finance? Is that why you're kind of like entrusted with this?
Yeah, I did work at a broker-dealer when I first got out of college, but unfortunately, I became manic, and I hadn't been diagnosed with my mental illness, so... We're thinking it was just a manic episode where I lost a good job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how many members of the clubhouse do we have now?
I'd say about 17. Amber, if you want to back to
Yeah,
that.
I think we're at about 17. And can I just say, Leslie, in terms of, with Matt, Matt has an education and he also had a background in finance, but... when you have been in and out of the hospital, like Matt, and lost jobs and lost a place to live and have been in and out of jail, your confidence takes a massive hit. And to be able to come to a clubhouse and use the skills and remember them and bring them back out in support of something bigger than yourself. And that's a quote from Matt. I like coming to the clubhouse because I get involved in something bigger than myself. The confidence then comes back. And I think that is the key for a lot of people. People have the skills. They have the abilities. Our members are so talented. They're all very smart. A lot of them are very well educated. Some are working on their education. But when you have a confidence blocker and you need to get your confidence back and find the skills you need again to go to work, that's something that the clubhouse can really support with. And we've seen that with Matt and many of the other members. I don't know if you know this, Leslie, but in our first year being open at Summit County Clubhouse, we were able to place 75% of our members into employment. And not one of them lost their job during COVID. So our members are ready and willing and capable of doing whatever anyone else can do with support of the clubhouse. It's really quite fascinating to see.
Yeah, congratulations. Those are some great numbers. And you had also mentioned to me, Amber, that you're beginning now to focus on reaching out to the Latino community.
Yeah, that's correct. We are trying to focus this year on reaching out to the Latino community. We know that the clubhouse can be a great resource for individuals in the Latino community. And, you know, not being from Park City, I don't know a lot of the locations of where we can go and find individuals who would be an amazing fit for the clubhouse. So one of the things we're trying to do is hire a staff person that speaks Spanish so that they can go out and reach out into that community. We're also trying to collaborate and work with other organizations in Park City that have already been established and let them know about what we can do to provide services and opportunities for individuals in the Latino community.
All right. So do you have that job posted somewhere?
You know, we actually posted it, and we hired someone, but this individual hasn't started yet, so we're just waiting on that, and then we're excited to get out there and see what we can do to bring support to individuals in the Latino community.
Okay. Anything else, Matt or Amber, that you'd like to mention?
Yeah, I just want to say that... I was just going to say, I would love to just say, you know, we're really excited for our renovation and our home, our forever home. We're excited to be able to support adults that live with mental illness in the community. There is hope, and I think that that's a really much-needed message that we need to spread, because this last year has been very difficult for so many people with COVID and feeling anxiety and depression. There is hope. Clubhouse can help restore a lot of that hope to individuals. And I just want to, you know, kind of give a shout out to our team, our staff, our members, our board, and our supporters of the community, because they have been amazing to help us not only launch 2 years ago and then live through COVID and now a renovation. We've been a very, very busy organization, and we're going strong, and we're just the beginning. So we're excited to keep going and bring Clubhouse to the community.
Okay. How do people get more information about Clubhouse?
They can go to our website, which is summitcountyclubhouse.org.
Okay. Matt, did you want to add something?
Oh, no. Definitely thanks for the board. The board's doing a great job. Thank you. If you are suffering from mental illness, please look us up, and we might be able to really help.
Okay. Matt Rattan, thanks. Amber McKay, thanks so much for your time. Well, the Park City Council explored options for potential summer programming there at the site of the proposed Arts and Culture District at last week's meeting. The council was in favor of planning events at the site and will consider approving the project at their next meeting. KPCW's Sean Higgins has more on that.
The five-acre site at the corner of Kearns Boulevard and Bonanza Drive was recently prepped, and old buildings were torn down in anticipation of the proposed Arts and Culture District. In the meantime, City Council and Park City will be looking to approve a plan for summer programming at the site while the final details of the district are discussed. Park City Mayor Andy Bierman told KPCW the programming, which will be up for approval at the next council meeting, will be low impact and similar to what is found on Main Street on Sundays throughout the summer and fall. The budget for the programming is expected to be roughly $150,000.
We've talked about trying to do some food trucks there, some low-key music, public art, children's activities. This is a great location in the center of town, and now that it's leveled out, we feel like it could be a park and a gathering spot, and maybe start to let us re-envision it for the community gathering place we hope it will be if we move forward with Arts and Culture District. So we're going to play around. It's mostly going to be low-key, like the activation you see on Main Street during Car Free Sunday. But we're hoping to have something up and going by August.
Councilor Steve Joyce cautioned against mulling over the options for too long at last week's council meeting and said if they wait any longer to start, the public won't be getting much for their investment.
I kind of worry just a little bit. I like the concept here, and I just wonder, you know, here we are. It's almost the end of June. We still haven't made a decision. I don't have a sense of how much it would take to really make this safe, prepared, get all the construction stuff that we've heard out of the way, you know, scraped so it's flat, all those kinds of things, fences moved. Are we then, you know, at August 30th, and it was like, well, that was fun, you know, and we kind of missed the whole summer.
If approved, programming at the site is expected to run through October. Sean Higgins, KPCW News.
Former speed skater Catherine Rainey Norman has been appointed chairperson of the committee overseeing a potential bid from Salt Lake City for the 2030 or 2034 Winter Olympic Games. She joins me now on the phone. Good morning to you, Catherine. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Leslie. Thank you for having me.
And you too, stuck in that traffic, huh?
Stuck stuck on I-80. Yes, exactly. It's been a bit of a journey this morning.
Oh, well, I apologize for that, since we did it by phone anyway. But congratulations on the appointment. Is this a volunteer or a paid position?
This is a volunteer position. And so I've been helping with this effort for, oh my gosh, probably since 2011, 2012. We've had several different iterations of it, and was obviously recently appointed to this role and very humbled and honored to be serving in this capacity.
Yeah, so what does the position entail?
Yeah, so I'm working very closely with our CEO, Fraser Bullock, helping to sort of evaluate what our bid may look like, should we go for a 2030 or a 2030-40 games. Also working closely with our board members that serve on this committee. We have close to 70 board members, and so made up of different state, civic, business leaders, athletes, et cetera. And so, you know, really listening to them and understanding from them, you know, what does a future games hold for Utah and what does that look like?
So this isn't a new committee then. It's been around for 10 years.
Well, we've had some different iterations of it, but this official version, the Salt Lake City, Utah Committee for the Games, has been together. I believe it's been since 2018. Okay. So,
and then who are you succeeding then?
So Cindy Crane was our initial chair, and she did an absolutely wonderful job at laying a solid foundation. And, you know, the committee has always been very focused on athletes first. That's one of our core principles, and kind of in moving forward in that direction and holding true to that principle, they had decided that it would be advantageous for us to put an athlete in the role of chair.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself. I noted that you're a former speed skater who represented the U.S., I think, in 4 Winter Olympics.
Yeah, you're correct. So I was a speed skater. I competed in 4 Olympic Games, 1998, 2002, 2006, and 2010. You know, Salt Lake was by far my favorite games. And when I retired after 2010, I went back to school at the University of Utah and completed my degree there in communications. I spent several years up in Park City coaching the local Park City Speed Skating Club. Extremely proud of many of those athletes that have gone on to develop into national team, world team, and hopefully, fingers crossed, we may have an Olympian or two that come out of it in these next rounds. And I've also, I spent many years working at U.S. Ski and Snowboard in their foundation, doing fundraising for them. I currently work at the University of Utah fundraising for them, and I am a mom and a wife and very involved in the Olympic and Paralympic movement.
All right. Well, you had mentioned you know, whether or not we're going for the 2030 or 2034 games. Do we know that, or when will we know that?
We don't know it yet. We are still in the process. We're having a dialogue with the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee, as well as the International Olympic Committee, to evaluate which games would make the most sense. You know, as a committee, we are making sure that we are ready and willing and able at any point in time, whether that be 2030 or 2034. But, you know, we are currently in discussions, and hopefully, who knows, maybe this will be resolved soon. But we are still having those conversations. And again, we want to make sure that a future games is advantageous and positive for everyone involved.
Yeah, and that we've often heard that talk, given that the Summer Games 2028 are in L.A., that it maybe makes sense to wait until 2034.
Yeah, and again, we're having those conversations with L.A. as well to see what would make sense. And again, ultimately, we want to make sure that this has a positive impact on Utah, on our cities, on the Olympic and Paralympic movement here in the United States. And so we're definitely engaged in those conversations at this point in time.
Yeah, so who makes that decision? I mean, do you wait for direction then from the USOC?
Yeah, we will be working collaboratively with the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic City. You know, the exciting thing, Leslie, is we are America's Choice City for the next Winter Games to be held here in the United States. And so we are working with them collaboratively to figure out when that timing is right.
Okay. So I guess, I mean, what is it that this committee does then, not knowing when an Olympic Games would be held?
Yeah, so we're currently in the process of, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into a candidature city and putting that effort forward, and things have changed from what has happened in the past in regards to how cities are awarded bids. You may have seen that Brisbane, the 2032 Games is the leading games for the next summer games. And so things have definitely changed, and we are making sure that we have everything lined up and prepared, everything from connecting with venues, understanding how many hotel rooms we have, looking at locations for a possible press center, et cetera. And so there's a lot of work that goes into this. We want to make sure that we are ready and prepared for when the IOC does make that decision, because it's a much more fluid dialogue than what has happened in the past.
Yeah, and as you know, for the O2 games, the Cottonwood Canyons were off limits for hosting any venues. There's some talk, though, that Solitude could be one of those that would hold, like, the skier and snowboard cross events. Is that still what we're thinking?
You know, we're looking at all different options, quite honestly, and we want to make sure that we are putting forward a game that is innovative and new. And so we are looking at all different options at this point in time.
Yeah. And that's been one of the selling points, I think, is that, you know what, we could hold the Olympics tomorrow if we needed to. What else would we need to do if we were awarded the games?
Yeah, we are we are so well positioned, Leslie. It is really that's probably the thing that excites me the most, is that we are incredibly well positioned. You know, the Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, the Utah Sports Commission have done an excellent job at trying to make sure that we are continually bringing in these high level events. Our venues are extremely well maintained and utilized, more so than what they were in 2002. And so we are very well positioned to host another Games. And so we are in this very unique position right now, where we can look at how can we innovate our games, what can we do differently, how can we enhance that athlete, spectator, and stakeholder experience. Those are things that we're very much so focused on. We're very much so focused on how can we have a lasting impact, probably even a greater legacy than what we had after O2. And so those are the conversations that excite me when we are talking about, you know, what programs, what legacy can we put in place to enhance our youth and encourage them to participate in a healthy lifestyle through sport. And so we're in a really good place.
Yeah. And that was part of the O2 games. I mean, we saw that healthy financial legacy as a result of the games, which I'm guessing is probably dwindling down. Would that need to all get spent in order to bring us back? Or would we talk about bonding like we did, you know, back in the late 90s?
Yeah, you know, the Legacy Foundation, they've done an excellent job at maintaining those funds and ensuring that our venues are active, that our programs are vibrant. And, you know, that's really a testament to Colin Hilton's leadership in that effort. And so, you know, we will, you know, as you noted, our venues are starting to get older, but we have done an excellent job over the last 20 plus years. And the nice thing with a future games is we should see an influx of support towards these efforts, and that would come through sponsorships and, you know, philanthropic dollars and ticket revenues, et cetera.
Okay. I should also note that actually Lindsey Vonn was also added to the board?
Yeah, just so thrilled to have, you know, we have some amazing, I'm so excited about the athletes that we have involved in this. Lindsay was enthusiastic when we asked her to join. We're so excited to have her. Ted Rigetti is a part of our effort, which, you know, as we know, he grew up there in Park City. He is a wonderful kind of product of what happened out of 2002. Billy DeMong, also a part of this effort, bringing that experience as an athlete and also as a sport administrator. And so we have so many incredible athletes in our state as a whole. And then to have these athletes take part, and those are probably some of the best phone calls that I got to make, Leslie, is, you know, instantly their first words are, yes, 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 how can I be involved?
Okay. All right. Anything else you would like to tell us? Any other updates?
Well, just thank you so much and for staying interested in this. And, you know, I shared a couple of days ago, you know, a lot of people think that 2030 or 2034, you know, it's a long ways off, and it isn't. It comes up so quickly. And, you know, think about the 10-year-old speed skater, the 10-year-old ski jumper, luge athlete, skeleton, you know, they're focused on 2030. They're focused on 2034. That's their dreams are starting. And I'm hopeful that we can just be a part of that and help that become a reality.
Okay. But we still don't know when the IOC would make a decision.
We do not know that quite yet. We're in conversations with them.
Okay. All right, Catherine, I appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Leslie. Have a wonderful day.
That is Catherine Rainey Norman, again, the chair of the committee overseeing a potential bid for Salt Lake City for the 2030 or 2034 Winter Olympic Games. Summit County reported another COVID-19 death Sunday. KPCW's Jessica Lowell has more on that.
The Summit County man who died of COVID-19 was between 65 to 84 years old and wasn't hospitalized at the time of his death. This is the first reported death in the county in more than a month. Summit has now seen 14 total COVID-19 deaths since the start of the pandemic. The Summit County man who died was one of 8 deaths reported Sunday, but the Utah Department of Health noted that 7 of them happened before May 27th. To date, almost 2,400 Utahns have died due to COVID-19. The State Department of Health reported roughly 6,000 more vaccinations Sunday. Utah has administered more than 2.8 million vaccines. In Summit County, 87% of eligible residents have received at least one dose. The county has administered more than 56,000 total vaccines. And in Wasatch County, 57% of eligible residents have received at least one dose. Wasatch has given out almost 29,000 doses. After a slight spike in cases in Summit County last week, the county reported 3 new cases Sunday. In comparison, last Sunday, the county saw 4. Meanwhile, in Wasatch County, the health department reported 7 new cases, the highest daily increase since June 7th. The Utah Department of Health announced 282 new COVID-19 cases statewide Sunday, which is around 30 more cases than the state saw at the same time last week. The 7-day rolling average of new cases is now 335 per day, up from last week's average of 294. Jessica Lowell, KPCW News.